everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 131 for the 14th of May, 2011. And Josh, we are only 10 minutes off the clock.
I know, and not only that, we're going out without a broken board or anything. It's great.
For some reason,
10 minutes is nothing to me.
The technological gods seem to be smiling on us, touch wood. All right. Now, I'm David McVeigh. This is Josh Philpott. This is our geek show. We do this every Saturday. We start around the 12 o'clock mark. We were actually broadcasting, to be fair, at 1:45.
But our
pre-chatter kind of went on a little bit too long. we used to do a tech show, a dedicated tech show, and we used to do an after show, and the day got very long, and quite frankly, we didn't want to get into all that heavy tech anyway. So what we decided to do was mesh the two together and put it together as one show, the Geek Action Show, where we just get to geek out for an hour or so. We talk a bit of tech, we talk about a bit of junk, we talk about a bit of rubbish, we talk about whatever's catching our eye at that particular moment. Sometimes we get into politics, whatever. Whatever is catching our geek little minds.
Whatever we feel like.
And this week is going to be completely predominantly grabbed by Google I.O., I think, because this was their week.
Well, basically. we will discuss that.
So we'll talk a little bit about Google I.O. and the stuff that they are announcing. Yeah. I believe Josh is going to give us a... That was a good one. Bless you. Josh is going to give us a game review, which is kind of nice. I like game reviews. So and Josh's headphones keep playing up, so if you hear like little fiddling around, it's because his headphones are... Yep. We might change the channel...
Might change it
to channel 2 if things are really playing up.
Later on.
All right. So we're going to do that. And we also have to mention that a lot of our links for the show come from Delta Knight, who is in our chat room and our moderator. He's also known as Dave Murray. Thank you very much, dude. But first, we do have a little bit of feedback. Now, let me just get rid of those notes because that's for a later show. The feedback is actually heavier for this show than it is for film, actually, this week. But I will just say one of the feedbacks in particular is actually from last week.
Yeah.
And if you listen to last week's show, you would know that we got to the Film Actually show, and I went, oh dear, here's another feedback that we were supposed to do, and I forgot all about it. So we start off with them this week. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that this feedback is actually a little out of date now, because there's actually been an answer. So we'll just run through it very quickly. This is from Zenfu. Who wrote to us and said, I have been going back through all the previous shows of the last few months, having missed way too many of them. This does include the Raw DLC podcasts as well, which we'll come back to later. I recently listened to the show where you talked about the Windows Phone 7 and the update that broke the updater.
Yay!
He said, well, this morning I received the following link titled All Windows Phones Are Not Alike, and the link is in your show notes, and we'll come back to what that is in a second. And after thinking about the reasoning behind this from the Microsoft point of view, it made me wonder how this works with the iPhone and iTunes. Is there even a way to update the iPhone without iTunes? Well, the answer to that is no. Simple. I am interested to get your thoughts on this, and if you believe that Microsoft has gone about this the right way in enforcing this. Now, if you don't know what he's talking about, the way that Windows Phone 7's updates are happening at the moment is they're kind of staggered between the providers. Mm. And there's been a bit of a problem with the brands of phone and the providers. And this is one thing I will give Apple is the fact that because they've maintained complete control, when an update comes out, it goes to everyone simultaneously. It's as simple as that, right? But in the other worlds, Android is another example of this, where they have carrier plans and they have different manufacturers. They updates are not always uniform. What happened with the Microsoft Phone 7, the event that he's actually talking about, is the fact that an update finally came through. But it wasn't for everyone. And a very clever and ingenious programmer came along and wrote a workaround for that, and basically wrote this program to so that even if you weren't allowed to get the update, you could use the update.
Yeah.
The problem is now an official update has come out for the phones that didn't get that update originally. And if you applied this hacker's patch, you are no longer eligible to get the proper update. Microsoft has actually said, if you have this patch on, you can't have the update. It doesn't work. It's not that you can't have it from their point of view. It doesn't work technologically. Yep. Now, the link that he sent through in that email, which is in your show notes, is a letter from the person who wrote that hack saying, I am working on it, and we're trying to get around this, and we're going to do this, and blah, blah, blah. And it's a long letter, basically, from him saying, you know, keep the faith, right?
Yeah.
Now, the update on this, because this letter came through over a week and a half ago now, is the fact that Microsoft is now working with that hacker.
Oh, that's... All right? See, stuff like that always makes me happy, man.
Absolutely. I think it's fantastic. They're actually basically working with him to find a way to restore these phones so that the patch will work. Mm-hmm. So stick with it. Bear with it. Don't panic. They are actually working on it. It's not like they've said, you did naughty, so we're not going to help you. It's a technological issue.
Yeah.
They now have to fix what the patch did.
Yeah, because it's interesting, because it's like if you look back in history, I mean, like a lot of the best stuff that's happened has always come from these people that are ingenious enough to create a system to get around things. And it's like you don't turn around then and tell these people off. You help them.
No, and we're actually going to do a story a little bit later on about Kinect as well in the show notes. Come up a little bit later on. But basically, it's I think the point that was made in the comments field of the YouTube page where I got the video from that we're going to talk about later. One of them actually said in the comments, Microsoft embraces the hackers and you get innovation on the Kinect.
Yeah.
Sony blocks the hackers and you get a system that goes down for 30 days. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, sometimes you just got to embrace the people who might be smarter than you. Mm. You know, there is a situation where they might be a little bit smarter than you, you know, and they might have some wild ideas that you didn't think of. Embrace that. Mm. And I think Microsoft has been doing very well lately. They never used to be like this. This is this new touchy, soft, touchy feely Microsoft that we've talked about before. They never used to be like this.
Yeah.
So anyway, so yeah, if you've got one of those phone sevens and if you did, you apply that patch and now you can't update, wait. The fix is coming, okay? Yeah. And in our chat room over here, by the way, we go out live. We have a chat room. You can come and join us. Watch at gigactually.com/live, and you can join the chat room. And we've actually got a few people in the chat room today. It's very lovely. In our chat room, it's actually gone past now, so I can't even see who said it. So if you guys want to shout in again, you're more than welcome to. Somebody said, isn't this like jailbreaking on the iPhone? Yes, absolutely. If you jailbreak your iPhone, there is a good chance that the next patch out is going to brick your phone because you are doing something that the phone wasn't designed or what they didn't want you to do.
Yeah.
All right. And this is why I don't jailbreak my phone.
Yeah.
Because I like to be up to date.
And while we're talking about the chat room, just for a sec, thank you, Pop. My Gears of War 3 shirt, bought by Shane, ex-tech, actually, friend of ours. It's very cool.
It's a great shirt.
Yes. No, I'm very happy about that. And my girlfriend has already said she's planning to steal it.
And I was going to wear my lovely new Geek Actually jumper, which you can actually see in that Thor interview because it would stand out beautifully on this show. But my lovely wife last night bought these chocolate cookie things that you put in the oven, and they've got like this runny chocolate filling to them, and they were absolutely gorgeous. And I ended up covering myself in chocolate.
All over yourself.
But it was so good. It was so good. I ended up wearing half of it. Yes, Zed in our chat room said, except Apple would never work with the hackers. Well, that's true. Apple is the opposite end of the spectrum, which is they are control freaks.
Yeah,
and they won't do anything without their control. So that is and Sweet Pea says she wants a jumper. If you head over to cafepress.com.au/geekactually, we have them on sale over there, and they're really, really cool. In fact, I'll let you in on a little bit of inside baseball. When I went to that interview with Jamie Alexander and Tom Hiddleston, the first thing Jamie Alexander said to me was, she goes, I want that jumper.
You made a really good jumper, apparently.
It was a good jumper. What can I tell you? Yeah. All right. So, and Jason Melbourne says he loves chocolate. Me too. Mm. Okay, let's move on and say in our next feedback we have... I see it. Now, this is from James from Melbourne, our good friend. Now, this came in fairly late, and I threw the photos up. Remember, you guys, you got to get your emails in a little bit earlier. I'm preparing show notes all day Friday, okay?
Yeah.
But I did put this in because it made me laugh. He says, hey, Dave, I see the point of this house, but this twit forgot to have shotgun-sized holes in the wall for easy pickings. Now, he says, I bet Delta already sent this to you. Damn Delta. Well, Delta didn't send this to me, and I have a picture. This is actually a guy... he's an architect, and he's designed what he calls the safe house. And I love this. This is the house, okay? I put it up on screen. Now, for you audio listeners, what we're looking at is basically a block house. It's all concrete and everything, but it's got bay windows and all this sort of stuff. But what happens is, and it has a courtyard and everything, which you can't see. If you go to the site, though, I'll put the link in the show notes. Mm-hmm. If you go to the site, you can actually see a flash video of how this all works. It's got these stone walls and everything. When you actually hit the button, the walls all move and the shutters close, and it becomes zombie-proof.
Oh, dude.
So the picture I've got now, all the shutters are closed, the drawbridge raises, and all the walls that actually slide into place to open all those windows slide out to close off the courtyard. It is an amazing house. So I just look at it. It's a concept house, and I don't think they actually meant it to be zombie-proof, but this is what James from Melbourne saw it as. And he thinks that there should be little shotgun-sized holes, though, in the
Well, no, because you wouldn't want to be wasting your bullets. If you're safe, then you're safe.
That's right. What you need is easy access to the roof.
Yeah. James also sent me an email, and I just wanted to bring it up.
Sure.
Just about the Raw DLC, one of the comments Dave made. I'm sure you're aware of this, and I'm sure you're just making a joke, but Dave said it's kind of like going from bridesmaid to bride. And, of course, what Dave was meaning was, you know, it's going from being relatively good to being incredibly good. What James from Melbourne's saying is when it goes from bridesmaid to bride, isn't that worse? Because technically then she gets fatter and then she pops out a kid and then, you know, it's like, it's not really a statement that works. And I was like, James, I love the way your mind works. That's just all I wanted to say.
I don't think any of our fans think the way James thinks. One day, James, we're going to sit down and have a drink. All right?
Yes.
It's as simple as that. We're going to have to do that one day. Okay. The next email comes from Lee from Tassie.
Yeah.
And I think this is this may be a first from Lee. I don't think we've had one from Lee before. Says, hey, guys. First off, love both the shows. And thanks, Josh, for getting me into Full Metal Alchemist and Priest. Loving them both.
You're welcome.
Okay. Just a couple of quick things regarding the iPad 2. Okay.
Yes.
One, so I finally got mine after ordering on the 25th of March and receiving it on the 28th of April, which is way too long to wait for anything in this modern world.
Damn right.
Agreed, but absolutely. They're having a supply problem. They always have a supply problem with new stuff. This is an Apple thing now.
Yeah.
But when I turned it on, I noticed considerable screen bleed. Now, this is not the first time I've heard about this. I rang Apple and they said it should fix itself after a few days of use, but after a couple of weeks, it's still there. Should I get it replaced? Damn straight.
Yeah, no, get it out of the way, man.
I use it for games, movies, and comics mostly. It sounds like my use of the iPad. So I can notice it a bit, but I don't know if it gets worse or has any other effects on the iPad itself. It won't have any other effects on the iPad, and it probably won't get worse. It sounds like there's something on the bevel that isn't sitting where it's supposed to sit. Call up the Apple Genius Bar or go to apple.com.au, make an appointment. They make will swap it on the spot.
Exactly.
If it's wrong. Okay. Yep. They're really good at the Genius Bar. Two, found this free app and I use it every day. Saved me buying a little monitor. Don't know if you guys have already talked about it or not, but here's the link. And she gave the link, which I'll put in the show notes. Basically, it turns your iPad 2 into a wireless monitor for PCs.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this link that she's sending is a PC one only.
Yeah.
It doesn't work on Mac, but it's free, which is fantastic. I did actually do a little bit of research. There is one for the Mac as well, but the Mac one cost about $10. So I'm hoping that these guys will make a
really?
Mac version.
Really? So getting something on Mac and you have to pay for
it? I know! What a concept! AJ says, keep up the good work, Lee from Tassie. Lee, pleasure. And yes, go get that iPad replaced.
Mm.
Definitely. All right, last one. This is from our friend. Now, this actually, once again, this came through last week, but we kind of botched it because of the boards having problems and stuff. This came through from our good friend Snake Oz, who wanted to tell us about his quadcopter. All right. Now, Snake Oz has been on the show before. He was in our after show showing off his digital Rubik's Cube, and we have talked to Snake. He is going to try and come in down and do a bit of show and tell with his quadcopter, but his birthday isn't till August.
Aww.
So technically, he's not allowed to have it until August. Okay.
That's so funny.
So it's arrived, and it's boxed, and his wife won't give it to him. Okay. But he was allowed to take it out of the box and fly it once just to make sure it was all working. And he sent us video.
Oh, mad.
All right, so here is Snake's copter, the first test flight. All right, so here's his new quadcopter. And for our audio listeners, look at the little controller and everything. Isn't it awesome? He's got a little digital controller. And he fires it up. And there it goes! I want one.
Dude, look at how perfectly still it sits.
I want one.
How long does the battery last?
I don't know.
I guess we'll get all those answers when we see him.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at this thing. His landing's a bit rough, but it is his first flight. There it is. Okay. So that's his flight of his quadcopter,
cool.
Which I think is... And James Miller said, wow, it's quiet. It is. It's very quiet. He did send a second video. We'll play this one too. For our audio listeners, once again, sorry, these are visual, but we will just keep talking over the top. And they are just a quadcopter, like test flying. This one, he actually makes it go. Okay, yeah. So have a look at this one. All right, so here it is on his little landing pad again. He's going to start it up. And up it goes. Got a fast liftoff.
Mm.
I don't know who's on camera, but they're missing it.
Well, I think he's actually
there
driving.
There it is. Yay. Wow. How smooth that control is on this thing.
Dude, that is so cool.
That is awesome. So in August, hopefully, we'll have this thing in the studio. Hopefully, we'll bring it in the studio and we'll fly it in here.
That's cool.
I'll have a little bit more room in there by then as well, because the studio will be a little bit emptier. That is so cool. So thank you very much, Snake, for sending those through. They are awesome. He also sent through photos and all sorts of stuff. I might even prepare up a post and put the photos up on the site, because it's very pretty. I'll show Josh really quickly. That's it packed, and that's it without its guards on.
No, you got to have the guards on.
Yeah, that's it with its guards on. So there you go. There's
you want
some
the guards on.
Yeah, of course. You got to fly it with the guards on. All right. So, okay, now, the last email, I said that was the last email. There was actually one more, but we're not going to go into this one in detail because he also sent us links. This is actually from Delta Knight.
Mm.
And he actually said, hey, Dave and Josh, I might just be really behind the times, but I just found the Google I.O. Day 1 video, and I must say I'm starting to turn away from the dark side of Apple. They showcased some amazing products and gadgets, some that I've been wanting to do with the iPad for some time. And he sent through the video, and he says, looking forward to the show. All right, we actually have some of the video from that Google I.O. I didn't capture the whole thing because, of course, it goes for an hour or something. And that was only day one. There's a keynote for each day of Google I.O., and they kept doing more and more products. But we are going to talk a little bit about Google I.O. now. So, some of the products I'm excited about, some I'm not. And I think we should start this by just saying that this is kind of like Google I.O. stuff. So what was announced at Google I.O.? I have an overview here. Now, I haven't watched, to be fair, I haven't watched all of it because it's a lot of time commitment to sit there and watch all of them. But I have gone through some of the specs and stuff and had a look. First of all, they did talk about the new versions of Android. First of all, was Honeycomb. The 0.1 release of Honeycomb, which is coming out, which will actually make it available to more products. One of the things that they did announce was a DK, but it's not an SDK. It wasn't software. It was a ADK, I think it was, which was the application developer kit.
Yeah.
I think it was. I could be wrong about that. But basically what they were showing off was the fact that you can now program it to use external devices. And one of the things that they were really... we're losing light. Something is flickering. Oh, we're about to lose a light. All right. Maybe at the break we'll pull that light out. Now, one of the things they were actually talking about in great detail was the home of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was that automating your house, and you could actually buy products that actually had the Google automation built into it. And if you didn't have products that had Google automation built in, they were actually selling kits that would allow you to connect non-automated devices to automated switching, so that from one device you could make lights go on and off and dim. And
just like that?
Just like that one, yeah. The one that just went out, yeah.
At least it's gone out now.
Well, yeah, hopefully it stays out. All right, we need to replace some light bulbs in here. We need some Google apps. Anyway, so things like, you know, being able to control your TVs and all your various apps and everything in your house, basically being able to control automated, which has been like, you know, the science fiction fantasy of forever. But one of the things they actually demoed with this was they actually used an Xbox controller on a tablet.
Yeah.
So they're on an Android tablet, they plugged in the Xbox controller.
I'm so surprised they were allowed to do that.
Well, Microsoft seems to like the hackers at the moment. So.
Yes, well.
But what I thought was interesting was that, now, I didn't see this video. I only saw the video, their demonstration video, which it actually did work, which was kind of cute. But apparently they tried to do it live on stage and it failed. So it wasn't quite perfect technology yet. But it's getting there. All right, so that's 3.1 Honeycomb. So that's going to roll out and going to be available on more devices. But more importantly was, in the fourth quarter of the year, this year, they're going to roll out Android Ice Cream Sandwich, which is the next Honeycomb.
Best name for an operating
and
system.
And somebody actually pointed out to me, and you know, when you actually start looking at it and it makes sense, which is, of course, they're actually in alphabetical order.
I don't care. That's great. There has to be another food thing than ice cream sandwich. And
yeah,
why does it have to be ice cream?
Look at the logo. Come on.
Yeah.
The logo is so cute. The logo is the Android symbol as an ice cream sandwich. It's very cute. And that thing's flickering again. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Now, the big news about Ice Cream Sandwich is that it's going to be cross-platform. This is going to be the Android to unite them all, theoretically. It doesn't matter about form factor. So they're saying Ice Cream Sandwich will be available on all types of phone, including ones that have got controllers, ones that have got keypads, and so forth. In fact, let's let Google tell us. I have a little bit about Ice Cream Sandwich and the features of it. So here's from the Google I.O.
We're targeting a Q4 launch for Ice Cream Sandwich, and in many ways, this will be our most ambitious release to date. Let me tell you about some of the themes behind this release. First, choice. If I had to pick one word to explain Android's phenomenal growth over the past year, that word would be choice. Consumers really like choices, and with Ice Cream Sandwich, we're going to make them really, really happy. Here's just a small sample of the range of devices that will be powered by Android. So we have phones in every size and shape, phones with keyboards that slide, phones with keyboards that flip, phones with built-in game controllers,
that would
tablets
be PlayStation.
In every size from 7 inches to 10 inches, even tablets that transform into laptops, and who knows what else is coming. But in the end, we know that high-quality apps are the lifeblood of Android. So our top priority for Ice Cream Sandwich will be to give app developers the tools they need to deliver great experiences on all of these devices.
Damn straight, so they should.
That runs everywhere. Let me tell you how we're going to make that happen. To start, we're taking all of the good stuff that we added to Honeycomb for tablets, and we'll make it available everywhere, on phones,
that's
on
really
tablets.
Good. So the Honeycomb stuff will go to phones.
This includes the new holographic UI, the new launcher, the new multitasking UI, richer widgets, advanced applications, everything. Next, we're investing heavily in the application framework. We want to insulate developers from the differences between all of those devices as much as possible. So we're adding new APIs to the framework to help scale your UI across all these different form factors. And we're adding intelligence to components like the action bar. They'll be able to reconfigure themselves to optimize for the available space. We're also putting a lot of energy into our development tools. Be sure to check out the Android Tools Talk tomorrow at 3 for some exciting development.
Teaser.
And last, but certainly not least, it will all be open source.
Oh, dude.
There you go. And that's the key here, fucking is the fact that they are going to make Android completely open source, which was the promise from the beginning. And they've kept it a little bit closed until now. So now that they're actually going to do it open source properly.
That's always been a little bit of my issue. Like the fact that one thing I've always loved about Android as an OS is the fact that you can kind of pick it up and pretty much use it however you want to, right? The problem that I had was you had to do all these things with Honeycomb before you could even get it to work.
Yeah.
And some things just weren't built in. Like, from out of the box with the Icona tab, which is Acer's new 10-inch ginormous, it's very awkward. But anyway, with that tablet, it doesn't come with a file browser.
Oh, well, that sucks.
Especially considering one of its major advantages over other tablets is it has a USB port. And yet it has no
file browser. Okay.
So you actually can't automatically put files off a USB.
Is there a file manager in the Android store?
Oh, there's 7 billion.
Right, there
but
you
the
go.
Point is you've got to do that. But to do that, I've got to connect to a connection.
Yeah. I see
then I also have to get a Google account before I can do so. It's just like, I was like, how many steps do I have to go through before I can just
show
people?
You got to jump hoops.
Yeah, man.
All right, so that was the big announcement about Ice Cream Sandwich. They also, by the way, if you went to Google I.O. this year, they gave everybody in the audience the 10-inch Galaxy Tab, which doesn't get released for another month.
Bastards!
They gave all 5,000 people in the audience one on the spot.
I hate you. All of you.
Yeah, I hate them all too. All right, so then we go on to the Android Marketplace. They also talked about the Android Marketplace, saying that it was broken and it needed to be fixed. And they added easier ways to search and find stuff. And they also added movie rentals to it. And then,
okay, that's cool. I have no problem with anyone adding movie rentals nowadays.
They actually had at Google I.O., they had a really big push on media, because the other big announcement they made, which was on day 2, I believe it was their music service. Now, their music service was Google Music Beta, I think they were calling it. Of course, it's beta. Everything's beta. But what I think is very interesting is they went the Amazon way. And they basically said, screw you, music labels. We're not even getting permission. And they just opened it. just like Amazon did. Because, and you notice that Amazon's still up, which means the music companies are having trouble fighting this one.
Yeah.
Because what they, all it effectively is, guys, before you get too excited, is basically an online storage locker that is in your name. It has playback facilities or streaming facilities built into it. You upload your entire music collection into that locker, and then no matter where you are, you can stream your music off of that locker. It's as simple as that. That's what it really is. Now, I personally, I'm not ready to go putting all my music up onto the cloud. I just, for me, A, I've got too much music. It wouldn't fit in the locker. I'm not particularly that interested in that. But
there's
if you
so
are
many reasons
interested
I'm
in that,
not. Because there's other things. Like, as an example, there are certain services available with Ubuntu One, which is a function they've built into the new Ubuntu, where you can actually pay, I think it's $3 a month, and they will give you access to like apps for phones and stuff like that that will allow you to do the same system. So this isn't a new idea. But my only problem with it is I've uploaded 4 or 5 albums into it, and it, you know, just in case I need it and I'm somewhere where I can't get access to my normal thing or sitting down in front of someone else's computer. But that doesn't happen.
No.
And I'm quite happy to have my music on my drive, because if I go outside cell phone reception, like, again, it's that whole thing of right now I am independent.
And this is a problem I have with the next big thing.
Yeah.
Is the Chrome OS. And they actually did a whole big announcement on Chrome OS and the laptop. Samsung is one of their partners, and they've got another company which is, the name has eluded me. I'm sure it's here if I actually look for it. By the way, that was the ADK is the word I was looking for, the application development kit.
Yeah.
I want to say Samsung, and I can't remember who the other one is. Anyway, but I'm sure the chat room will jump in and help me out here. Basically, they announced Chrome OS. It is coming. It's going to be launched. And for those who don't know what Chrome OS is, it's basically a Chrome web browser that takes over a netbook. Basically, the netbook is just a web browser. That's all it is. Their logic behind it is they actually said, it's a grand statement, but they actually said computers, the way we use computers today is broken. And they basically said that this is the future of computing. The idea that you don't need to update your system, it updates automatically. You don't have to worry about viruses or patches or anything. It all happens automatically. It's secure. It's safe. You don't have to worry about installing or uninstalling programs because it's all web-based. It's all... And, of course, what are they looking at here? They're looking at their locker, Google Docs, Chrome browser. You're buying into the Google
you
world.
You are being wrapped in a safety blanket.
That's right. Basically wrapped into a safety blanket. My argument was immediately, what happens if you are offline?
I'm sorry, but I'll go one step further. I don't want you controlling what I do with my computer.
Second point was, I like localized computing. I like the fact that this is my computer, and what is on this computer, I have it configured and done the way I like to do it. I have what installed I want to have installed. I control this computer the way I want to control it. Then I have online services that I can access, like Dropbox and stuff like that, but they don't rule my life. They are backup, they are transfers, they are file transfers. I don't mind. I don't get hit by lots of viruses, and I don't mind updating my software and stuff like that. So I have no problems with the way it is working.
Until we get unlimited internet, and that's, you haven't got me.
And that's the next big issue, which is Google has to realize that we are not all America.
And America now has caps.
Yeah, well, exactly. So
their whole system to me is broken from the point of view that we all have caps now.
And Sweet Pea says, I love Chrome. I love Chrome, the web browser.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily love the idea of Chrome OS.
No.
That's my issue. Chrome web browser, fantastic. Beautiful. Fantastic stuff. Works really well. Use it on the Mac. I use it on the PC. I love it. Great stuff. I have a problem with this idea of... Basically, it feels to me like it's a huge step backwards. It feels to me like terminal computing.
Well, no, it's interesting because you remember when I was talking recently about my article that I put up about installing Linux onto computers and the fact that I had been through and tried out all these versions of Linux. I had a try of Jolly Cloud. Now, Jolly Cloud is essentially the exact same thing that they're trying to push here. And it's all online, it's all web-based apps and all that sort of stuff. And the problem was that you feel like you're using a web browser the whole time. And it's like there is no separation. And my connection isn't good enough to do this. And that's another problem we have here in Australia. Our connections aren't perfect. And we don't have unlimited access to internet wherever we are. If I move, like as an example, if I go down to Coogee Beach, my USB sometimes stops working. Does that mean my whole computing experience stops?
Now, that was the first concern of mine. Apparently, though, you can use the apps offline. This was the first thing that one of they were saying, was that the apps are all available to you offline. Doesn't that mean that they are actually storing programming on your hard drive?
That's what I would imagine.
Yeah, so I'm not sure quite how that works. But there's also going to be an app store, and of course all these apps are being written that are all web-based apps, not apps that are like standalone apps. And of course they did the Angry Birds test. They have written Angry Birds to work in the browser, and apparently it works very, very well. And Josh and I were talking about this before the show started. When does the Angry Birds craze finish?
When we stop caring about it, which I did everywhere. Millions of years ago. It's like, look, it's an all right game, and I'm not saying that it's not. My problem with it lies in the fact that there are other games.
Zed in our chat room has said that Chrome devices, no, where is it? Chrome OS will make the great porn browser.
Yes.
Why would that be? Is that because it's got secure searching? Anyway, so that's Google I/O. They released a lot. They discussed a lot of things. We only kind of touching on it because we've got other things to talk about it as well. I think the biggest announcements of the day. Oh, by the way, and everybody in the audience at the OS got a Chrome OS laptop.
Son of a bitch. How do we get to these events?
Now the one
I want
to walk away
stuff.
With a free 10-inch Galaxy Tab and a Samsung laptop. Why can't we do this?
We're getting there, Dave. We just have to keep pushing.
We do.
We'll ask for invites next year.
Now, the one thing that they did announce that I thought was very interesting was they actually did say that there's going to be great student pricing on the Chrome PCs. Now, this was something I could get behind. They basically said that they're going to be offering the Chrome laptops to students at like $20 a week or a month or whatever it was, right, for like a three-year contract. But it had an upgrade plan in it. So after the first year, they would upgrade it to the next model and then to the next model and so forth. So for the students, it's great because they don't have to outlay money up front and it's not like they're stuck into antiquated
and
technology.
And also, look, I mean, there are advantages to this. When I say this, I say I don't think we're ready for this. Starting it is no problem, and I'll come back to why I think evolution in these sort of things is fine. I'm not against their browser. It's just I'm not going to start using it. I like quick systems. But I work offline a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I work in situations where I will just be at a cafe somewhere. I don't want to use internet. I just need to sit down and write, or whatever it might be. And to be able to pull out something and have a quick access, fast load up kind of thing is great, right? But I don't think it's going to give me what I want at this stage. After using Jolly Cloud, and again, you can use certain applications offline and stuff like that, it's just, it feels broken. You feel like your umbilical cord is disconnected when you're not on the net. And that's the same feeling I get generally from what I've seen of Chrome OS. Yeah.
Also, there is still compatibility issues because the greater part of the world still uses Microsoft Office. And even though Google Docs is really neat and really compatible and really good, it's not 100% compatible because nothing ever is. All right. If your school is saying that you need to work in MS Docs, how are you going to use a Chrome netbook? It's just, and until Microsoft gets their online version of their Office suite out of beta and perfected, because they are supposed to be doing an online version of their Office, and you know who they've gotten their sites for that one. They're taking Google Docs on head to head. But until that is like widespread and everybody knows about it and it's free, it would have to be free because it's the only way you can compete with Google Docs. I don't see the greater people saying, but I need MS Docs. I need MS Office.
Look, it happens with Mac, so I can't imagine it not happening with this. I think it's a great concept. And look, I have played with a lot of streaming music. I am about to, at the end of the month, because I ran out of my free trial, going to start Last.fm, which is kind of like a collaboration of what they're trying to do and Genius on the iPhone. It is the most pleasant music experience I've ever had in my life because it is using all of the data it can find from everyone that uses Last.fm to the kind of music that they would listen to. And it goes a whole step further than Genius because Genius is restricted to your music and that sort of stuff. I have found in the space of a week about 40 artists I didn't even know existed.
Apparently the new Google Music service they announced also has a system like this in place as well. And they actually say, and they kept making all these references like, and it's so much better than the competitors because, and you're going, you're just having a stab at Genius right now. That's all you're doing. But basically these services, until they are tested and they work for you, like Last.fm obviously works for you, then they are not good until they've been tested. Yep. You can tell me all you like how this thing is going to find music, but I tried Genius with my music collection,
yep.
and it found nothing because I listen to, or my music library, because of the shows and everything, obviously, is predominantly things like musical scores and soundtracks and esoteric stuff and very odd music that I have. It could never find collections for me because it doesn't know.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I mean, things like Last, this is why I'm not against the concept. I think Last FM is a perfect example of why this system can work and why we can all really benefit from it, because it's just a beautiful musical experience. Because I just picked an artist that I know is a downbeat music kind of a person, and then all of a sudden I just get this list of music from people I don't know. It's like listening to the radio without ads and getting a perfect music experience. This sort of thing is fantastic. And that's why I'm okay with this concept. I like this idea, but the problem is that it has to become more evolved before it becomes regulated.
Right.
And for you and me, we do far too much with our computers.
We do, and that's the thing. And I think we have to come to terms, though, Josh, that a lot of this stuff that they announce at any of these announcements, whether it be Apple or Microsoft or Google, it is not for us. Mm. It is not for, in fact, for most of our chat room, I would say it is not for them. Mm. It's not for power users. It's Microsoft once referred to the laptop and the desktop computers being the truck, and this being the sports car. Now we are truck drivers, and you know, and the point is, you know,
that's great,
but it's true. I mean, the point is very true. We need the machine that can do the hard work. This is a sports car. We take it out on the weekend and we run around with our iPads and we can do our web browsing. But you and I, and half if not most of our chat room, is going to be truck drivers. Mm. We're going to be people who need computers that can compute, that can actually do stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on because we're running a little bit over, and Google I/O, that we've kind of milked that to death. So let's move on and basically say that this week Microsoft bought Skype.
Officially
they bought it. Now, they didn't only buy Skype, they bought it in truly spectacular Microsoft form.
Creating an event that no one wants to go to, being incredibly awkward and spending too much money.
More along the lines of eBay bought Skype a few years ago, as we know, for $3.1 billion. Last year they actually sold off part of Skype, remember, for $1.2 billion. Skype this year actually posted a loss of several hundred million dollars. And yet Microsoft paid, are you ready, $8.5 billion for Skype.
I love the title of the article. Why exactly?
They just literally bought everybody, everything, every technology. What they did was they paid off all debts of Skype. Mm. They paid off everybody in Skype, and then they put cash on top.
Yeah.
They just literally just bought it, lock, stock, and barrel, which is something that nobody else has done. Microsoft has money to burn, so.
Now, I have a theory on this because I did hear about this earlier in the week. My concept is that.
And yes, a sweet pea pointer, they paid in cash.
They just rocked up with trucks and trucks of money. No, look, I have a feeling that this is because Windows is very aware, and whether or not they're behind the ball and they're going to come to the party late on this, they're getting the feeling that Google is about the fact that the world's going internet. Now, I have seen and used part of the beta of the Microsoft Office Online. I don't believe it's going to be free, which is a huge problem for me, and I don't think that's...
Microsoft doesn't do anything for
free. They could fall on their own sword if they don't fix that, but Skype is going to replace the MSN component, in my opinion.
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
I think Skype is an interesting purchase from Microsoft. I think it's going to replace MSN Messenger.
Yeah.
I think it is going to be built into their phones. My question is, this is Microsoft we're talking about here. So will there now be 15 versions of Skype?
Yeah.
From pro to free, will free have carry advertising? You know, it's like there's so many questions that need to be asked.
Mm.
If they bought Skype and keep it the way it is,
yeah,
we could be okay, but they're not going to. You know
but
that.
But it's interesting because it's like we are getting to a point now where we don't like advertising. We don't like our windows being fooled. And we will aim for the operating system that will offer us the cleanest experience. And which is why people are moving to Mac, because Windows, you know, when we're online, there's a lot of pop-ups and windows. You can turn them off, but most people don't. When we're getting a lot of things like Office, we've got these things popping up going pay money and buy it and get it outright. We've got our internet, you know, sort of our internet security popping up and going, hey, you've got a month left. You want to pay for that again? It's like we've just got Windows is becoming this big sea of problems for that kind of componentry. And it's like we're getting to the point where we need to clean ourselves out. And it's like if you are the one that's going to add the advertising in, you're going to lose people.
Yeah.
It's like the reason people use Google Docs is because it's so clean.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just your Google clean, account.
It's free, and it's fast. Callisint in our chat room has said he liked Tom Merritt from Tech News Today. I actually heard that one. Tom Merritt made an observation that this was an overseas purchase. Microsoft has a lot of money overseas in their overseas companies, and they would have had to pay a bucket load of tax to bring that money back to America because it's not being taxed in America at the moment. Mm-hmm. So did they do this enormous purchase of Skype just basically as a tax write-off? Because they've got all that cash. They can't bring it into the country.
Let's buy stuff with it.
You know?
That's good. I like that.
And so it's a really good observation. And yeah, Tom Merritt is right on the money for that one. I think he could have something there. Spenny Toon, that's Josh Spencer, who does our cartoon work for our Mark. He's in our chat room as well. Hi, Spenny. He says Skype webcam quality is better than MSN. No shit. So's the audio quality.
Yeah.
There is nothing...
Skype and Microsoft Net equals Skynet.
Or Skype Net. I don't think there is a technology out there at the moment, and I could be wrong. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think there's a technology out there for VoIP at the moment that rivals Skype's quality, because they're using the peering technology, which is their proprietary system, and it works magnificently well. And I don't think there is another messaging client online or a VoIP client online that can actually call landlines.
Yeah.
I think this is a Skype only feature. I don't think on any of the other VoIP services can you actually dial a landline from your browser.
Well, no one would use the other ones anyway. It works too well on thing.
Mumble is close, says Calisynth. Okay, fair enough. Yahoo Messenger can. Okay, Sweet Pea, thank you very much for that. I haven't used Yahoo Messenger in years, you know? Because every time I turned on Yahoo Messenger, I was having robot women going, I loved your profile. Do you want to make contact with me? It's like, what profile? What are you talking about? And you sit there and you have to clear out 45 invites before you could even
fight your way
through to actually using the client. So I stopped using Yahoo. Yeah. I stopped using everything Yahoo because of that reason.
Mm.
Everything has become a spam flood on Yahoo. All right. So that's Skype. And look, the future is... It's going in two directions. Either Skype is going to benefit from this, or we are seeing the end of days for Skype, which could be a blow for podcasters because everybody's using Skype to bring in calls and stuff. Who knows what Microsoft will do with this. I'm actually, Josh, going to open the phone line just in case you have any comments that you want to bring up about the Skype purchase or about Google I.O. Please call in. We're going to continue with the show, but if you want to call in, our call-in number is now on... Now, where is it? Where is it? Our call-in line number is now on screen, which is Sydney number 02-801-13167, or our Skype ID is Geek Actually. Feel free to call in. Keep your comments and try and stay on topic if you can. We will take any calls that come through. So we'll continue on, though, and say... We had a big plus, a big feather in the cap. Now, before we get too excited about this, it's not dropped completely. But in this federal budget for this year that came out just recently, the net censorship project, where they actually helped ISPs, subsidize ISPs for getting censorship software out there and so forth, has been slashed. The budget's been slashed.
Nice.
They basically said, it's not working. We don't need to keep paying this money, blah, blah, blah. And with everybody else saying that you don't really need to be doing this, the government has slashed the budget, which means they're actually turning their focus away from net censorship.
Damn fucking
like
right.
Like a slow boat, it's turning.
Work.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like Telstra's one that they've got installed on computers at work. I needed to get to Dick Smith's website to check something.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, of course, that was censored, right?
Dick.
But all I did was misspell the word. And then I could get to the website.
Did you know that for a long time there, the White House, the official White House site in America was actually net censored? Because the president's name was Bush.
Oh,
and his sidekick was Dick Cheney.
Yep.
Yeah, so there you go. And the net censorship was actually blocking the White House site. Go figure.
Fantastic.
Isn't it just wonderful? All right, so good news for us in Australia. They have said that this doesn't actually affect the moving of them still trying to push forward the compulsory net censorship, but it means the boat is slowly turning. They're taking their money away from this project, which is a good thing.
Hey, money's where it starts, dude. If they've got the money, they can work towards it.
I wanted to share this with you, Josh, and I'm going to share this with everybody in the chat room. Did you see any of the Battlestar Galactica follow-on series Caprica?
No.
All right. In Caprica, there's a point where they're on a train, and she's reading a note, and it's actually written. It's a digital piece of paper. So it's just, she like unfolds it like a piece of paper, but it's got a digital display on it. And I thought, wow, that's technology. Wouldn't that be great? I just want to show you this video very quickly. This is actually using e-ink on Tyvek cloth. Okay? So this is the future of e-ink displays. Are you ready for this?
Oh, I am.
They're folding up and crunching up the piece of paper while the display is still running.
That's awesome.
How freaking awesome is that?
Yeah. No, that is so cool. That's like a few steps away from like geek technology.
And it goes one step further, and I'll only play a little bit of this because the demo goes on for a long time. They're saying that they can use that kind of technology in interfaces. So here is a foldable, bendable phone.
Flexible displays are extremely lightweight, very thin, and allow for interaction styles.
This is only a demo, obviously.
Paper documents. Bending the display as a form of input is a new and promising affordance of flexible displays.
How's that?
We conducted a study to evaluate the use of bend gestures on a real, functioning, flexible display.
Bend gestures?
Why not just touch
the display
gestures?
We used is
well,
a
that's
because
this particular demo is actually dealing with the idea of bend gestures, but the concept is you've already got your e-ink display. You've already got whether they've actually made that touch sensitive yet, I don't know. But theoretically, you could put that capacitive display over, but is it bendable? I don't know. But the concept there is that the actual circuit board itself is actually a bendable circuit board. It's flexible. The idea is you can program in a bend gesture. So you could actually say, for my contacts, I want it to bend. If you bend it this way, contacts opens.
Yeah.
So you program that. So the next time you actually do it, contacts just open, you know, stuff like that. So the idea for me, though, is not so much even the bend gestures. For me, the idea is having a phone on this bendable type interface, you could just slip it into your back pocket or into your wallet, you know.
I like the I think the first one's more practical than the second one.
I think the
concept of having like
one piece of paper could contain your whole book.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. Things like that. Very cool. Very cool.
So I think that's for me, that's we're seeing. See, that to me is much more impressive than the Google I/O stuff.
Yeah.
That's like real innovation stuff. Because you can sit there and look at that display and go, that's amazing. And they're also coming out with color e-ink now. So you put a color e-ink on that paper.
You want to know why we don't see Google OS as such an amazing step forward? Because it hasn't stepped forward in any way.
No, it's a web browser.
Let's go past the way that they're doing it. Essentially, it does what our computer does anyway. Like, remember when we were looking before the show at that list of things that they were saying, like their advantages. Instant on.
Already got it.
My computer takes 13 seconds to boot up.
Well, and anybody's iPad is instant on.
Exactly.
Airs are instant on.
Exactly. We also had, what did they say, fast interaction with programs and stuff like that. I use Linux. I don't really have a problem with that at all.
Any dual core will give you fast.
Exactly. Yeah, no. I mean, like, none of these are steps forward. They're just web versions of everything we already have.
James Melbourne says, Josh only takes 13 seconds to boot up, ladies.
So it's one of those things. It's like, I don't see any of what they've done with this as an advantage to me. Like,
yeah, well, and Northy has just said in our chat room, what the hell is the point of Google OS? I'm sure there's a watered-down Linux distro that does exactly the same thing.
Jolly Cloud.
It's called Jolly Cloud.
And
there
it's
you go.
Available, and it does the same thing.
Yeah, it's already doing it, and it's, Google, I think the whole Chrome OS thing, this is time and energy that could be being put towards Android to build better tablets and better devices.
Sid's bringing up porn browsing again. He's like, don't.
I can browse porn on my iPad, dude. I don't think. Oh, here's your tip of the day. Something I just learned. And God, I could be just a moron. People sitting there going, wow, you really only just figured that out. On your iPad, you know, one of the limitations of iPad that has always freaked me out is you get to those things where it has like a box, and let's say got a JavaScript box, and you can't use the scroll bars within that box. Put two fingers in that box and go up and down, and you scroll inside the box.
Oh, there you go.
So there's your tip of the day. So any place where it says you can scroll through it, put two fingers in that box and you will actually scroll through. All right. So all right, where were we? I'm lost now. Oh, that was e-ink and phones and stuff like that. Oh, Anonymous has come out with the other side of the Sony. This is the other side of the Sony story. I'll do this very quickly just because we're following up on stories. But you remember Anonymous said they had nothing to do with it and blah, blah, blah. Now, this is a really interesting article written on Gizmodo, and the link is in our show notes. One of the reasons why I think we really want to believe Anonymous at this point is because they're actually saying, we don't want hackers pissed off with us.
Yeah.
We didn't do this. This is not within our style. They wrote this press statement basically saying, you need to have a look at this because what is it in their interest to piss off the community.
Mm.
Yes, they're mad at Sony. Yes, they're mad at other people, but they have stopped doing attacks because it's had a negative effect on their reputation from the people they're supposed to be protecting.
Mm.
So they look at it and go, 30 days of PlayStation being down, or 35 days or whatever it is of PlayStation being down, does not benefit them.
No.
So they're saying, we didn't do it because we don't want to piss people off. Mm. You know what I mean? And so you sit there and look at it and go, it's not in their interest to do that. And also Anonymous has said, we don't steal credit card information.
Yeah.
That's not within what they do. And they've actually conceded that it could be somebody from the Anon group. It could be somebody that is basically putting that calling card down. But it is not sponsored by Anon, what is it, Anon Ops or whatever they're called. It is not sanctioned by them. Yeah. All right. So there is a really interesting, a very interesting article talking about the fact that you got to look at it from Anonymous's point of view as well. This is not benefiting them.
Yeah.
And so why would they have done it? All right. So Sony needs to have a read of this, I think, because it is a valid point. All right. Because we were kind of hard on Anonymous last week, and just I think
no. But I mean, it's what I said. They're doing exactly what they should be doing at this stage. They're coming out and they're being public about this, and that's the difference between them and Sony.
Hmm.
Is Sony's coming out and going, it's them, and just going, we'll let you know if something happens. We'll let you know if something happens. We don't have a date, and it's just they're keeping everyone in the dark. Anon sitting there on the fence and going, look, guys, we don't want this to happen. And we are saying publicly, don't do this.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, that's all they can do. It's like, at this stage, all they can do is try and tell them to stop. And that's the thing. I mean, but look, if you're stealing credit card information, you're against everything Anon stands for, in my opinion.
I agree.
And so this shouldn't be classed as the same thing. Anon have no interest in stealing credit card information or details. It doesn't follow. Like, if you go back through the history of what they do.
It's not their MO at
all. They don't do violent attacks that hack the user. They do attacks which stop people.
They're a protest group. Exactly. They're not thieves.
Exactly.
All right. For those who worry about Facebook security, you should. Semantic actually discovered that over 100,000 apps I think it's 100,000 users, actually, is what I want to say. Where is it? They actually said in this article on Semantic, which the link is in our show notes, it actually said that they have found that all of these apps are actually leaking or stealing your information, and Facebook 20 million Facebook applications are installed every single day, according to this. And what they've discovered is that your information, photos, personal details, all that sort of stuff, is being leaked to these apps. Now, Facebook has closed the door. They didn't know about it. They've corrected it, and they've said that they've closed the door. But that doesn't excuse the fact that this has been happening for years. Years this information has been leaking off to third-party manufacturers of these apps. And I want to say 100,000 pieces of user information has gone out. I can't find the number off the top of my head. That's one problem I don't like about Goodreader is I can't highlight passages. But anyway, I just thought I'd just let you know that, the whole concept of Facebook and its security, it never really goes away. There's always something new. All I'm going to say about Facebook is, look, we all use Facebook. Here it is. Close to 100,000 applications. It was applications. Close to 100,000 applications were enabling this leakage.
Wow.
They estimate over the years, hundreds of thousands of applications may have inadvertently leaked millions of access tokens to third parties. So basically, your information is out there. All right. So first of all, this is a good reason not to run lots of Facebook apps, which I think are a really dumb idea in the first place.
I have three, I think.
I think I'm running three or something as well. And secondly, it's probably a very good idea that you don't put all of your personal information on Facebook. Really, there's no need to put all of your personal information on Facebook. And thirdly, I don't trust anybody that much. No. I don't trust any one company that much. Facebook would like you to use them.
Well, look, I mean, the bigger thing is, if you're going to sign up to one, we just need you to do one thing. Look at that column just down below it that tells it what it's accessing, and make sure you're comfortable with that. It's like, I've seen these people send me things like what movie are you, or whatever, and it's like, you look at it, it's like, allow access to your personal details. I'm like,
Why?
No.
Yeah. And somebody said that they've just now introduced this new login and device activating system that comes up, pops up and says, no, sorry, SpinningTune has said, you allow this application to access your information. You have to ask yourself, why do they need to have that information? But this is also not just allowing that application to access the bits of information it needs. What this leak was doing was actually getting into your profile and then accessing everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
Not just the bits that it needed. So Facebook security, big ba-bow again. All right. And just keep your eyes on that. And once again, just look, it's about common sense. Don't put all your eggs into one basket.
Yeah.
Really not a good idea. We'll skip that. I have to bring this one up, though, before we get onto your Brink review.
I know. I saw.
Viagra condoms are coming. I just thought this was very funny. Apparently, what they're doing is they're putting a solution, a cream or whatever, on the internal of the condom.
Yeah.
So that when you actually put it on, through osmosis, you're actually absorbing it, and it actually makes you last longer and harder.
Can I just ask, though, doesn't that mean you kind of have to get hard before you use it?
Well, yeah, I think this is for sustained erection.
Ah, right.
They're saying that this also reduces slippage of the condom because it keeps you erect longer, you know, stuff like that. I just look at this and go, really? Are we really reaching that point? How many dysfunctional men are there out there?
Sorry, James from Melbourne's just said Angry Birds is the gaming equivalent of that Friday song. But that, I'm like, wow, that's so good.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Kinda, thank you, man.
Kind of getting that way. You know, I just thought this was very amusing about the condoms. It's not really a geek story, although, I don't know, geeks sitting there. Did you hear that study that actually said that people who sit 6 hours a day are drastically reducing their lifespan? Apparently sitting is now become a health issue.
Oh, wow.
So it's good, isn't it?
I'll add that to the list of things I don't care about on a daily basis.
They just did a study showing that the pill Extends has Viagra in it. Well, the pill called Extends, I would think, does have a Viagra in it. Bump, bump. Thank you very much for that, sweet pea. all right. Now, this was the interesting concept I mentioned at the beginning. Kinect hacks are all over the place. People are doing all sorts of things with wonderful Kinects. This was a German, I think, no, Russian, I believe it is, a clothing store. This is a bit loud because it's got a DJ playing music in the background. Just put up with it. This is a Topshop store in Moscow. Basically, they've created a Kinect booth that you can go in front of and you can actually see what the clothes are going to look like on you before you go into fitting rooms and stuff like that. So just to give you an idea, it's not perfect, but a lot of people seem to be having fun with this. So here's the Kinect fitting room for you. Have a listen to this music too. Anyway, so we'll turn this down a little bit. There we go. So yeah, they go up to the machine, the Kinect's sitting on top of it, and they can actually see the samplings of clothes, what they would look like on them in advance. And there's a feature, they keep reaching up and touching. I think there's a camera you can take pictures of yourself. See? Now, it doesn't, they don't fit perfectly or anything. I think the idea is just to see if the style works on you.
Yeah.
And I've actually kept this video going a little bit longer because the last person is a guy trying it out. And you just got to see the expression on his face. Get out of the way, lady. All right, so the link for this is in our show notes. For those who are listening to audio, you'll be able to have a look at this. So the idea is just to be able to check out the styles and the fashions and see if anything particularly fits on you. Kind of DJ in the background. DJ is hot. You'll see her in a minute. She comes up. So I thought this is an interesting idea.
It's a very cool idea.
I think we're going to see a lot more of this.
Being used perfectly.
And once again, this is Microsoft embracing innovation. Saying, you know, try whatever you want with this thing.
Yeah.
I think the Kinect is genius. I really... There she is. She's getting into it. Apparently, she's a fairly famous Russian DJ.
Is that the dude?
Yeah, there's the dude. Look at him. Look at his face. He never changes his expression. Look. So, anyway, there's the Kinect. We always like to talk about the Kinect doing new things and new experiences with the Kinect, and that's one for us now, where they're now using it in clothing shops. All right, Josh, tell us about this game.
All right, I thought we were going to wait until Geek Pick of the Week.
Oh, we'll do it
in Pick
of the Week.
Because I don't have another Pick of the Week.
Oh,
so
cool. All right, we'll move. We'll save it in Pick of the Week. Let's do weird, let's do weird food. Really, two short ones in weird food this week. First one is this device, and I've got a picture for our chat room. This is called the Bacon. Okay. And this is basically turning a standard oven, a standard, like, what, toaster oven, into a bacon alarm clock. So there's a kit that you can buy, and it tells you how to put it all together. And you, once you put it all together, you put your bacon in it the night before, and you set the clock, and when you wake up in the morning, you've got nice hot bacon. And apparently it squeals.
Oh, dude. You could have used that time for something, you know, useful in life.
But no, they made the bacon instead.
Yeah.
And the other one I thought we'd bring up really quickly was actually kind of a word of warning more than anything else. Now, all right. If you are perusing the classified ads and you decide that there's an ad that says that man is cannibal, wants to eat you, probably not a good idea to answer that ad, okay? According to this article in Gizmodo, it says here, according to their words, it says, most people know not to respond to an internet personal ad referencing cannibalism, joke or not. One Swiss man responded to such an ad, believing it would be a dark, twisted role play.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think dark and twisted is the word. How wrong he was. Luckily, the guy only spoke to the Slovakian human eater on the phone, who expressed a desire to kill, cook, and eat a potential victim. According to the UK Sun, the Swiss man alerted the police, and when he realized what was going on, the cops sent in an undercover person posing as him, and they arrested the person. However, this guy was pretty hardcore. Apparently, both the cop and him were shot during the altercation trying to bring him down. So this guy actually put out an ad saying, you know, come over, I'm going to kill you, cook you, and eat you.
Well, at least I
truth in advertising.
Yeah, and look, I mean, he was upfront about it. You know, he would have said to the guy, he's like, I'm going to kill you and eat you. And the dude's probably like, oh, well, that really wasn't what I was going for. I'm going to hang up now.
Look, word of warning for all those who are out there who need to do something more interesting in your lives.
Meet in a cafe.
Don't go
to a dark basement in someone's house.
Especially when you're doing some really dark fantasy stuff, because that stuff can be kind of dangerous. All right, so that's your weird food, and I think cannibalism counts as weird food, don't you?
No, there should be no warning for these people. Survival of the fittest is what we're getting from the chat room.
Why are the cops not already tracking these people down? I think they'd try, but you know what? There's a lot of these sort of ads and a lot of this weirdness going on in the world. Vore fetish, says Spenny Toon.
I think maybe gore.
Gore fetish? Vore fetish? I don't know. Creepy, he says. Okay, and Popshot says chicken in a can, but that was weeks ago, dude. Although this could be cannibalism in a can. All right, let's do our picks of the week. First of all, just very quickly, I've got a link in the show notes. Google improves the App Store. We've already talked about that, so we won't go into that in detail.
It does? It has? Like already?
This is from Google I/O. They're talking about the enhancements to the. I think it may be on the next Honeycomb. I don't know. I'm not an Android user. Guys, those who are Android users, get out to the App Store and tell me if it's been improved. All right. Yeah. But this one, I thought this was sent through. I think this is the jankiest, absolute jankiest add on to an iPhone or iPad that I have seen yet. And I've got it here. It's called the third rail. These are for those people who go, I need more battery power. And up until now, we've had juice boxes, things that plug into the dock, and I've been accepting of those. But this one kind of defeats the purpose of having a nice, slim new device. It's called the third rail. And basically, it's a cover that has a battery pack extension that clips on to the back of it.
Right.
But if you need more power, you can just keep clipping more and more battery packs to it. So you could, like, you know, stack it all the way to the ceiling and have your iPad last for the rest of the year if you want to. But it kind of makes it not so portable after that.
Yeah, it does seem a little
I just silly. Think that's kind of a janky design.
Yeah, no, I'm not down with that.
No, I think that's just not quite there. I think maybe one, but I think it's all going to get too heavy after a while. Anyway, so that was the link is there. If you are interested in a pack like that, well, fine, go for it. All right, so picks of the week. I've got two picks of the week very quickly. Mine are real quick, so I'll get back to mine. First one, both are iPhone. Actually, one's an iPhone and one's kind of cross.
Yeah.
First one I've got is actually a free app, and I had to share this with you guys because I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. Yes, I know it is a piece of marketing. Yes, I know it is just a silly little thing for people, for them to promote the new film Super 8 that is coming out. But what they've done is actually made something that works very well. Mm. It is actually an app called Super 8, and it turns your iPhone into a Super 8 camera. Yeah. Complete with effects. You can add scratching to it. You can add Mohr patterns to it. You can add all sorts of stuff. But not only that, so here you've got your thing to shoot, but you can also swipe, and you can have a look at the side of the camera where you can eject the film cartridge and label up the video file. Mm. You can also move over here. You can change lenses from black and white lenses X-ray lenses and so forth. Yeah. It's a really fun little app to play with, and it even has basic editing.
Now,
the editing in it is really like Super 8 style editing. So you shoot a bunch of shots and you can just rearrange the shots in order and then export it out to your library. So it's a really cute little app. And most importantly, it's free.
Dude.
So if you've got an iPhone and you want to experiment around playing with some Super 8 style photography, you can't go wrong with that being free. I know there's another one out there called 8mm, which you have to actually pay for. This actually works better than the paid one. Okay.
Wow.
So I know I've got both. All right. I used to shoot on Super 8 when I was younger. Did I ever tell you that? I'm old. The other one I want to talk about is 1Password. Now, Geek Betty, our very good friend, sent me a code for 1Password a while ago, and I put it on my netbook. And we were talking about secure passwords and stuff last week, and she actually sent me another email saying, "Did you ever use that code?" Yes, I did, on my laptop. What I have recently done this week, though, is I've downloaded the app for 1Password, which is a bit expensive. It's $17.99 to buy. But if you buy the pro version, the $17.99 version, you can install it both on iPad and iPhone. Mm. And what you do is you actually store your encrypted password vault in your Dropbox.
All right.
And so I now have it on my two Macs and my two iOS devices. And no matter where I am, I always have access to those passwords and the automated logins of 1Password, and it works remarkably well. So if you are looking for a password security scheme, it works on PC and Mac. It is both, and Linux, I believe. There is actually a Linux client for it as well. So you can get 1Password, and it does work nicely with Dropbox. So there you go. Those are my two suggestions for you. Josh, your turn.
All right, guys. Well, look, I wanted to take a few minutes to talk about something because, as is usually the case with anything that is mildly evolutionary, we have a tendency to either be afraid of it or to take it as the norm. And it's like when we talk about games like, say, GTA or something like that, when GTA San Andreas came out, everything around it was compared to that. Didn't matter if it did something original, didn't matter if it...
My phone.
Oh, right. Okay. Didn't matter if it did something original, didn't matter if it, had something different. The point was the experience the same as GTA or better?
Right.
So it had to be the full package upgrade on what it was.
Mm-hmm.
We have this with a lot of games. When Destruction first came into gaming, Red Faction was looked down on. This is Guerrilla about.
The second Red Faction, yeah.
Yeah, no, the third. The one where you had the third one. And no one talks about two, so don't worry.
I didn't even know there was a two. So yeah. I played the hell out of one.
Exactly.
Out of PC game.
And Red Faction Guerrilla got looked at, and they were like, it's boring. It's the same, it's the same sort of gaming as GTA. It's just more boring because it's all on Mars. Now, they weren't obviously getting into the fact that you could destroy anything. But what I wanted to talk about was Brink, because I had a real negative backlash towards it. People are buying it and on my recommendation and coming back to me and going, it's just not that great. And I'm like, have you played it online? They're like, no, I want to try it on single player. It's like, it's not a single player game. They're like, yeah, but it has a single player. I'm like, right.
Yeah, so did Quake 3. That doesn't make it a single player
exactly,
game.
Exactly, exactly. Now, I've sat down and I've played a lot of this game lately, and I've tried to be as unbiased as I possibly can, and I'm going to continue to say this game is the next evolution in gaming. Now, I want you guys to get on board this now so that you can be one of those people in 5 years' time that look back and goes, I actually played Brink and liked it.
Hmm.
Because Brink does so much that is different from anything else that I've played. The idea of taking all these concepts we have in gaming and trying to incorporate them into one game and then just changing up the very simple way that we have been playing online gaming. is just amazing. The idea that you have different body types, you have an RPG level of character interaction. So you have three different body types, you have heaps of customizability, but then you have weapon customizability as well. So we're taking all the things out of things like Call of Duty and all this sort of stuff, putting it into one game. Then, as an example, if you're in the light body type, you can actually wall run in a first-person shooter. So you can run along, jump over a banister, and then run along the wall to another area. So it's like changing up the way that we play games. So the interaction is dynamic. Also, when you are running, if you hit the duck button, your character slides. Now, you can still twist 360 degrees while you slide. So you can run away from someone, hit slide, duck under a shot, and then swing around and shoot them.
Last time I saw that was in the game Wet, which didn't do that very well.
Exactly. And again, this is all first person. It's all very fluid. Also, concepts like the fact that when you hit somebody with the butt of your gun, they don't just die, which is just silly, and they don't just take one hit of damage and it becomes a useless endeavor. You push them to the ground. That person can still shoot at you, but they become very disorientated. You then have a chance to shotgun blast them while they're on the ground.
Cool.
All these things are dynamics that change the way we play online gaming. And people just need, I just need to get that word out there. Don't buy it because you wanted a single player game. Don't buy it because you want a new version of COD because COD's getting boring for you. Go in, buy it, and maybe, I don't know, hell, try it for what it is. Okay? It is Team Fortress with 1,000 layers put on top of it. Hmm. And it just really needs to be looked at.
Try this out.
And the other great thing is the bots work either way. If you get
James Milner says, so don't buy it on PS3.
You can start. Well, the whole thing is, I think Dave Kaziki, who's a good friend of ours, said it best when he said, the single player is training.
Yeah.
It's training for online.
Well, it's exactly what Quake 3 was for as well.
Exactly.
So you play against bots. It was not very challenging.
Yeah.
But it was to teach you how to do all the things like rocket jumping and everything else so that when you win online with Quake 3, Quake 3 was Arena.
Mm.
You went into Arena, that was where the game was.
Exactly. And it's very much the same sort of system. Your single player will get you the idea and you'll get used to retards. You know, like you will see online.
Yeah.
But
we're not having a go at retarded or mentally challenged people. These are gaming retards. It's a very different thing.
No. I mean it just as
some
the
people
same.
Get very sensitive about these things.
Yes. All right. Cool. I'm gaming retards. Yeah. The people that will just not follow mission objective and try and play this like Call of Duty.
Mm.
And it's not going to work. Because the thing that I love the most about this game is there is no personal achievements for just shooting people. You don't get top of the group because you shot people more than anyone else or died less than everyone else. It's entirely based on how your team does. The more your team does well, the more experience you get.
Hmm.
And this means that every game I have been in online so far has literally been a team-based experience. So all you people that are whinging about Call of Duty, all of you people that think that the people that play Battlefield aren't playing fair, this game is made for you.
Zed just says, Steam says it's $90 US. What in the name of Christ?
My God, that is... Oh, no, but that would be about right, $100? I don't think that's right.
Not for US pricing. US pricing should be a lot lower than that. Can somebody confirm that price?
Yeah. But anyway, the experience has been the most fun I have had, and also the fact that I am playing single player and having people drop in my game and just playing with my friends against bots. But it's just this fluid experience. No matter which way you play the game, it's always the same feeling. You just may have slightly
Delta
terrible.
Says confirmed. Steam is $89.
Shit.
Wow, expensive game for a US.
As an online experience, I just haven't had as much fun as I've had with this game. The customization is amazing. It's using the id Tech 4 engine, so the character detail is exceptional. The gameplay style allows you to do things. Just as an example, I had a situation where I killed three people in one shot by literally leaping over a banister, and as I came down, landed on one guy, which pushes him to the ground, and then shotgun blasted two guys, and then as the guy got up, butt to the head. It's just like... It is more of an
Sounds
experience.
Like
exactly. It's a very different experience
Sounds
than anything
like
else you play.
Freak in our chat room has said, I get sick of playing online because of all of the idiots who just cheat, basically, and not playing with skills, just playing to be and censored.
And that's exactly what I got out of this game, honestly, is the fact that when I am playing this
game... James Melbourne answers that by saying, laugh out loud, Freak plays on Xbox Live.
I play on Xbox Live, and also the Xbox and PlayStation systems have dedicated servers, so there's no reason to laugh. It's actually going to be
Xbox Live, too. That's where I play. So.
But yes, if anybody's interested, check your Xbox logins, and I will delete some 13-year-old noob that I played with 5 years ago and insert you into my playlist, because I really, really would like to get some more people involved in this.
I've got to do more online gaming. I don't actually play online very much. I don't know why. I don't have a lot of the games that people are playing online. But if anybody does want to friend me on Xbox Live, it's Geek Actually Guy is my tag, and you're welcome to friend me if you want to. I won't guarantee that I'll play with you, but I will talk to you. All right. So for you, basically, this is a highly recommended online experience.
Absolutely. And, it is. Well, more importantly, man, it's the evolution of the first-person shooter. And I'm willing to say that on record, is the fact that this game changes the way that we play. And in 5 years' time, when the next Call of Duty starts implementing this, just remember Brink did it first.
Right. I'm going to have a look at this game, I think. Not while it's still $90 in the Steam store, though. Fantastic. All right, we haven't had a game review in a long time. You got to do that more often for us.
For a full review and more of an explanation of multiplayer experience, check out the Raw DLC thing we will be doing next week.
Cool. Excellent. We'll come to your plug in a second, and then you can give them all the details on that. I just want to finish today off, though, with a little bit of trivia. This came up today, and Delta also sent me the link, so I thought this has got to go in the show notes. Just to show you where we've come, okay? Mm. This is an article that was in the New York Times, and basically they have done studies and speed tests and so forth, and they've now worked out that the iPad 2 is actually as powerful as the most powerful computer in the world, the Cray, in 1985. So, and they're now saying that they're still testing, and they may actually be able to prove, as they continue on with this testing, that they might find that it's actually leads up to being fastest supercomputer all the way through to 1994.
Oh, wow.
So they're saying that the iPad 2 has a Linpack benchmark of between 1.5 and 1.65 gigaflops. For those who don't know what a gigaflop is, it's billions of floating point or mathematical operations per second. And this actually outstrips the Cray of its day. Mm. So I think that is just shows you where we've come, that this little sliver of a tablet is more powerful than the stuff that used to create graphics and television shows and all sorts of stuff, the craze of its day. So I think it's really amazing stuff. So if you ever start thinking to yourself, oh, my computer's too slow, think about where we were in 1984. Mm. okay, so, and what does it says here? It says, my calculator, Freak says, my calculator is the most powerful computer compared to the Abacus.
Yeah, I know. I will say that the one part of this article that kind of makes me laugh, it's like, who the fuck cares if it's as powerful as a supercomputer from 12 years ago?
It's a historical thing. It's looking
iPad trying to make themselves look like they're
No, this was an iPad. This was the New York Times doing this.
Yeah, well,
This was not Apple. This was computer scientists just looking at it and basically saying, where have we come from? It's like a few years ago, I don't know if you remember this, but when the G5 Mac came out, the very first G5 Mac Pros, basically, the tower desktops, they actually had to redefine the law books at that point, because according to the law books in America at that point, a computer that could generate the number of gigaflops that the Mac could generate was actually considered a supercomputer, according to the law books, and was actually illegal because it was considered a threat to national security, right? Because when those laws were written, computers weren't that powerful. And to have a computer that was that powerful, only the government could own computers that had that sort of power, you know? And so they had to rewrite the law books and redefine what a supercomputer was. So this is where this sort of stuff comes in. And you look at it and go, in effect, the iPad, if this iPad, you time traveled back to 1984, you're talking about a supercomputer, you know? So it's a really interesting thing to look back on it. Now, Zed has brought up, says, okay, Brink is $49.99 in the US and $89 in Australia.
What?
What? And considering that our dollar is worth more at the moment, that doesn't make any logical sense.
Yeah, well, look, and Zed says, sorry, he's not going to buy the game at this stage. Well, that would...
Yeah, I can understand that.
Wow.
I think that, what is it, Delta Knight says, fuck
Steam. How about everybody go and buy it on Xbox, where you could probably get it for $79.95? I'm just saying.
Yeah, might be a better option. Steam fail.
Massive fail.
Massive fail on that one. All right, we're going to get ourselves out of here. We've got a film show to do. For those who don't know and only listen to this show, we also do a movie show called Film Actually, which you can find on iTunes. We are still on a drive. If you guys could really help us out, if you are a U.S. listener in particular, U.S., anywhere outside of Australia. If you're in Australia, please do as well. But we have lots of reviews, and that's fine. But we really need U.S. and international reviews in the iTunes store. So if you're an iTunes user and you are outside of Australia, please throw a review in if you've enjoyed the show and help us out. That's for both shows, Film Actually and Geek Actually. Last week, guys, I'm only going to do this one more time, and then you don't have to put up with me anymore. So I'm only going to do this one more time. Little Geek is having a birthday. We are closing donations as of tomorrow or Monday. Actually, because of the show's actually not hitting tomorrow, we'll close donations on Monday. We have to close donations because we have to have time to transfer the money and then actually buy the device and blah, blah, blah. So if you are interested in contributing to getting him in his own iPad, we are trying to grab donations up to help get Little Geek his own iPad. The donations link is there on the sidebar of the front page. This will be the last time we mention this, and then we'll also unpin. I found out how to pin articles in WordPress, by the way. Last time, and we'll unpin that article, and it'll all be over. So if you are interested in donating anything from, you know, $5 up, it would help out considerably. So if you just want to donate that through, that would be fantastic. Now, if you want to send feedback to this show, if you want to have your voice heard, you can send it to our voicemail line, 0280113167, or Geek Actually is the Skype ID if you are outside of Sydney. You can send electronic mail to our electronic mailbox at feedback@geekactually.com. We're getting lots of mail at the moment, guys. We love your mail. Keep sending it through. Fantastic stuff. If you want to follow us on Twitter, get merchandise like t-shirts and stuff like that, or that wonderful jumper that I have, just go to geekactually.com. There's a follow us link and all of our links for everything that we do, social networking, stores, everything. Stores? Stores. And all that sort of stuff. Just go to that follow us link. You'll find everything you need to do.
Sweet Pea just bought a shirt.
Oh, well, I think that's fantastic. Thank you, Sweet Pea. Everything goes to helping support the show. Now,
we're not being derogatory either. That is actually her name.
No,
we're not being condescending to
Sweet Pea
her.
Sweet Pea7763 in our chat room. And a mug. Sweet Pea, you are my new hero. Now, remember, you can watch this show live. If you want to come along and join us live in the chat room and chat with us like these people have been doing, which is fantastic. We love our chat room. Chat room makes us just giddy with joy. You can watch
very
us.
Very active today.
They are. They're fantastic. Geekactually.com/live. And I just got an email today from Ustream saying that we can now embed on Facebook.
Really?
We are going to find out more about that because we might be able to put our stream straight into our fan page. So
depending
on how you want to consume it, you can consume it in all different ways. We're going to look into that. That's not there yet. We go out typically at around 12 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on Saturdays, but sometimes we're running a little bit late. Today we're actually not doing too badly, but sometimes we run late, sometimes we run early, but come and join us. It's great stuff, and then the film show follows directly on afterwards. Couple of quick plugs. WeekendRonan.com is the home of the Real Junkies movie podcast. They have they drink a lot of booze and review films, and they are a lot of fun. And they have a contrary opinion. Well, some of them have contrary opinions on Thor to us, so it's interesting. So go and have a listen to
them.
They
usually do, I find.
Well, that's right, and that's what makes the world go round. You listen to everybody's opinion; it's fantastic. And Josh, I believe you are attached to something else, which you've alluded to already on the show.
RawDLC.com is a gaming website. Head over and check it out. We are chocked full of information at the moment. We have an interview with Randy Pitchford from Duke Nukem. We have a great thing coming up on Monday, which is a Brink video we did with the head of Brink, which is Paul Wedgwood, which was actually done by a company called Studio 33 that put it together for us, and it looks beautiful. It is a really well-made video, considering the fact that it was a Skype call and the video.
I will also put out a plug for Raw DLC because I watched your interview with the head of Duke Nukem Forever.
Randy Pitchford.
Great stuff.
Interesting guy as well. We've got that. We've got coverage of the event that we were at for Duke as well coming up, and we also have a bunch of new interviews coming up next week. Hopefully, if I can score it, even possibly with American McGee, which would be very cool.
Very cool. All right. Well, keep our eyes on rawdlc.com to find out more about that. And, of course, you also have a live show every Tuesday night, mm-hmm. Which you can log into as well. Or find it on iTunes, Raw. What is it? DLC Live. What is your vodcast on iTunes?
The vodcast is DLC Live Video.
DLC Live Video. There you go. That's nice and simple. One last shout out because he's in our chat room right now, and we shout out to him anyway, but because he's in our chat room, we really should shout him out, which is, of course, Josh Spencer at SpennyTunes over at attackninja.blogspot.com. He's an artist like no other and did our cover arts for us. And those wonderful caricatures that are on our t-shirts and mugs that Sweet Pea just bought, he did them. And so...
Yeah.
He is well worth giving a shout out to. Go check out his other artwork. He's fantastic. Very good. All right, we're going to get out of here. We've got some closing music. We've actually got credits because everything seems to be working. Cross your fingers. We'll see you all next week. To steal Delta Knight's phrase, and it's on a cup as well. Geek on, everybody. We'll see you all next week. Bye, Josh.
Bye. Living people.